Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Following On County Cricketer. I'm John Norman with a very croaky voice this week. Alongside me, Nick Friend and George DeBell from The Cricketer magazine. And as ever, Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Looking back at round six of the County Championship and ahead to the first few matches of the T20 Blast, which gets underway this week. The County Championship having a month off. Essentially, the players going on holiday and playing some T20 cricket. But this show will continue throughout the summer. So we will start looking ahead to a little bit of the 20-over stuff. We're going to look back at the England squad announcement, which took place last week. Sad news surrounding Jofra Archer, who has suffered another injury mishap. So he's set to miss the summer. And we'll be discussing all the other big talking points. Also, we've had so much online in terms of questions, so we're going to have a bumper mailbag this week as well. So look back and answer some of those questions. So thanks for joining us, whether it's on the Following On podcast feed, TalkSport 2, The Cricketer Magazine's YouTube channel, or indeed Steve Harmison's YouTube channel. This is Following On County Cricketer. So, sad news really to start off this week. Jofra Archer, another stress fracture. I mean, I think that I make that six England fast bowlers ruled out of cricket for the foreseeable with stress fractures of the back, and another couple of players out as well. George, much has been said about Jofra Archer. There's very real fears about his participation within professional cricket in the longer form. Certainly moving forward, it's not really our place to speculate. But one thing, we were together, weren't we, in Hamilton. Was it Hamilton or Mount Maunganui? I can't quite remember. When Jofra Archer was bowled for 42 overs in a test match. But it would be a horrible, horrible feeling if that's the best and worst that we've seen of Archer, from Lords in 2019 to bowling 42 overs later that year. You know, we glimpsed what was possible. But sadly, we've seen the reality with the handling of him as well. And, you know, if we are going to miss more Jofra Archer, it's going to be a huge blow, not just to the game, but for the player himself.
I mean, that's the main thing, that he is quite a young guy with a lot of his career in front of him, and it promised to be a really special career. And absolutely there are worries about his the viability of his career as a fast bowler now. Other people have been down this road and have proved that there can be life beyond these injuries. I think the real worry is that he's got this stress fracture at the back without returning to competitive cricket. That is unusual, because the previous injury was, I think it was a stress fracture to the elbow, which had reoccurred. So it's a worry that he hasn't played a lot. On a positive side, he is skillful enough to reinvent himself, you know, Corey Collymore style. But that's not quite the same as what he was before. You know, if it is the end, it has been already a fairly special career. You know, let's not forget, he was a huge part of England winning the World Cup. I honestly don't think they would have won the World Cup without him. And a bit like Simon Jones, I guess, who played that huge part in 2005. You know, some players burn very brightly, but quite briefly. But really, let's hope it's not the end. This is crushing news for him in particular. It's terribly, terribly sad. And I'm sure everyone in cricket, you know, wants the best for him. But as I say, I am concerned that it's an injury to his back before he had returned to competitive bowling. That, you hear alarm bells, don't you?
Harmy, You know, obviously, you've got a career in fast bowling, personally and anecdotally. And of course, Simon Jones is still one of your, you know, your best friends from cricket. There's obviously obvious concern, but as someone who's been there and through this kind of thing, do you see a way out for Archer? Do you see a way back, rather?
Yeah, I see a way back. Yeah, of course. I think, like George mentioned, he's young enough, very, very skillful. And the flexibility he has and the sort of the way he bowls, you know, because of his action, I think he'll come back. He could come back at a similar pace that he was before. But it just shows, and like I ranted last week about fast bowlers, when you come back from injury, the first 3 or 4 weeks of you coming back from injury are the ones that are the hardest 3 or 4 weeks because of the rest of your body, what it takes a toll on. That's when you're in really sort of vulnerable for getting another injury. And unfortunately for Jofra Archer, as well as one or two others, that, you know, coming back from an injury is, that's when you are at your most risk of picking up a different one, because everything hurts, everything's sore, everything's stiff when you first come back. And it's about managing your body through that, you know, initial process. And unfortunately for Jofra, he's picked an injury up trying to possibly not, I wouldn't say consciously changing his action, but he must be doing something different to help the injury that he had, which was the elbow injury. And he's putting stress on other parts of his body. And unfortunately, his back hasn't been able to hold up. But I can see him coming back and playing. Whether he feels it's the right thing for his body to go back and play with a red ball or not, that would be something in his mind and only his mind alone. But I can see him coming back at a similar speed than what he was before, because just by the nature of the action that he has and the flexibility that he shows in that action, I think he'll still come back at a decent speed.
Nick, let's move on to the other big story from the last 7 days, the England Test squad announcement. We were actually expecting more than the, let's see, 13 players named. We were expecting a couple more than that. So looking through the list, Ben Stokes, obviously captain, James Anderson. Johnny Bairstow does make it back into the side. He's not rested for a couple of matches after playing in the IPL. Stuart Broad, Harry Brook, Zach Crawley, Ben Foulkes, Jack Leach, Alex Leese, Craig Overton, Matt Potts, Ollie Pope and Joe Root. Nick, of that list of 13, can you make an argument for or against, I don't know, I reckon you could probably make an argument for or against two of them. And I say Johnny Bairstow and Zach Crawley. I think all the others pretty much is kind of how we thought it would go. Not that we're surprised that Crawley and Bairstow are in it, but, you know, in terms of disgruntled players out there, who do you think feels that on another day they could have possibly just snuck in ahead of those two?
Oh, look, I mean, I think the two, you know, the irony is that Crawley and Bairstow are probably, you know, they're two of England's most recent centurions, aren't they? I mean, like, you know, the two guys on the way of saying on the edge of this, rather, you know, probably the guys who, yeah, you know, two guys who had a, you know, I don't want to say decent winter, because no one had a decent winter, but let's say a more creditable winter than others in terms of sort of raw numbers, test centuries. It'd be very England to drop the guys who'd got your test hundreds in a winter when no one could score a run. So I think the squad was always going to show us how keenly people had looked at the first month of the season. And for what it's worth, I think they did. I think we've got the leading, we've got Harry Brook, who I think was at the time selection was the second highest English run scorer in the country, and we had Matthew Potts, who was the leading wicket taker of any description in the country. So there'll always be guys who could have been picked. There'll always be guys who score more runs in county cricket. But equally, if you're expecting a county select 11 when they name the test squad, you're a week early. You know, that's, you know, that was named yesterday. It's not an England Lions squad. It's half a reward for county runs. It's also recognising that those guys aren't involved in the blast team. So that, you know, as we said last week, I'd have picked. I mean, I championed Sam Robson. I watched him again last week against Durham. I still think Sam Robson should be in the squad. I think Dom Sibley has a very good case. But I honestly think you can make a pretty solid case for all 13, or at least not necessarily a solid case, but a case where you can understand the selection. You know, I can understand the selection of Zach Crawley, not just because of a double ton 2 years ago, but because of 100 in the West Indies. And look, he got 250s last week. And as he said afterwards, if those 250s start a run of form where he goes well in the series against New Zealand, then, you know, then suddenly a slightly inauspicious start to the season when a load of guys at Kent were scoring more runs than him, let alone across the game scoring more runs than him, then suddenly that all that's, you know, sort of behind him. Likewise, Matt Parkinson's bowled very well, but I think there was an expectation that Jack Leach probably was the man in possession, probably was Ben Stokes' man, and would probably start the summer. So I don't think I was at all surprised there. I think it's a shame because I think I really rate Parkinson, but you can only pick 11, and I think it was pretty clear come the end of the winter that Jack Leach was had probably merited the chance to start the summer as the man in possession. And yeah, and on Johnny Bairstow, he didn't run away to the IPL. You know, that was very much an agreement with England cricket. He's gone to the IPL. He had a pretty decent winter with England. And I think possibly the only surprise is that he's not going to keep wicket in match at seven. That's the only thing that, you know, maybe is a bit of a surprise there, because then you'd have potentially one of Pope or Brooke at five and the other one at three, whereas it looks like Brooke's going to be the reserve batter and Pope at three. But I think the more time that elapsed after the squad was announced, the more I understood it and felt pretty unshocked and, you know, not nonplussed by it, but unoutraged, let's say. I think it's all right. I don't think anyone should think this is what Brendan McCullum, Ben Stokes, Ingham look like in 18 months' time. I think they're just starting where they're starting, and that's, you know, pretty solid base from where they were over the winter, isn't it, really?
Good stuff. Okay. Well, look, let's get on with the show. But before we do, I've got a quick question for you, George. So the selection panel was made up of Rob Key, Brendan McCullum, Ben Stokes, Mo Bobert, James Taylor and David Court. Now, excuse my ignorance, and no, I'm not trying to be insulting here at all, but can you tell me what David Court, or who David Court is? Player ID lead.
No, not really.
Really?
Oh, no, not really. I don't know him. And I don't think they actually were selected. I don't think they you know, had a vote. They had a voice. You could even...
He was named on the selection panel.
Yeah, but he wasn't one of the people who actually made the final decisions. I think it was the three of them, wasn't it? If you remember, there was I sent a tweet last week asking, you know, what all the departments involved in planning and performance do if you end up picking a number three who's never batted at number three and all the bowlers are injured. So these guys have the job titles and the responsibility, but they don't actually seem to take much.
Well, go on, I was going to say, George, just to follow up on what you mentioned, that I had an argument with Neil Killeen, Durham's bowling coach. You'll not like me for saying this, but what you're saying, what you tweeted, George, to add another one to that, I couldn't understand why Matt Potts didn't play for Durham last week. But then all my rants about fast bowling, when Killer disagreed with me, I actually seen the point after I put the phone down that it was right for Potts not to play last week because the amount of overs he's bowled, the young body. But I'm like, really? Three games into the season when Saki Mahmood gets injured, Potts is in the game. Potts is in selection for the 2nd of June. And Durham have got four games between now and the 2nd of June. The one game I'd have been championing them to play would be Middlesex because the batting unit that Middlesex have got. And Lords. The kid hasn't played a red ball game of cricket at Lords. So it's a difficult place to go and make your debut. And it's a difficult place to learn how to bowl. He could have done it in front of 1,500 people, 2 out of 3 days, and learn how to hit lines in the areas where you use the slope and you goes for you, it goes against you, as opposed to... And that comes down to the planning department that you were mentioning, George. It, again, ECB just baffles me. So, yeah, how Potts' programme wasn't to play at Lords the week before, or 2 weeks before the first test match is
so, on that, you know, if the plan was for Pope to play at three, bat at three, why wasn't he batting at three for Surrey? Why not more joined-up thinking?
Can I just add in there, George, because... I was at Beckenham and I saw Bats and Alex Stewart, and I said to them, you know, how many overs is Sam Curran going to bowl? And Stewie put his hand up, said he's an ECB player, so, you know, we are helping, so he'll bowl five overs. So it can be done, can't it?
It can be done. And the other one is Harry Brooke, who's clearly a very talented eye-catching player with a lot to like. But he's been scoring his runs at 5, 6, and I kid you not, 7. You're not preparing for Test cricket if you're batting down there. So why is he not batting at 3? If he bats at three in county cricket, I think he'll be better prepared to bat at four or five in test cricket. And again, you can see why they wanted Joe Root to make it at number three. It solves a lot of problems if he can bat at number three. There's no right and wrong with that decision, by the way. You know, there are pros and cons on both sides. But at the moment, you've got basically the big three, four, five and six. So all the youngsters have to sort of either fit in or miss out around them. And that doesn't seem to be making things as easy as could be. So anyway, a lack of joined up thinking, despite the fact that there are lots of people supposedly in positions involving planning.
Right, let's get on with the top line.
The top line.
Okay, guys, I think, there was some joined up thinking, certainly some agreement. Middlesex, Toby Rowland-Jones, certainly myself, Nick and George, we kind of thought that between them, there's your top line, really. Top of the group, and they've had a really impressive start to the season. How many injuries to England bowlers would there have to be for Toby Rowland-Jones to get a call-up, do you think, George?
That is a really good question, because in terms of sort of horses for courses,
yeah,
he might be. So probably not that many more. The other thing is, I think he's got a test average in the teens, hasn't he? Bowling average in the teens. You know, never let England down. Another really sad story, a bit of a sort of reminder that there isn't always a happy ending. You know, if you're looking at the Jofra situation, because he was doing everything right, looked like he was going to go to Australia on the Ashes tour, looked like he had the action, the ability that might enjoy the extra bounce on those wickets. And it was never to be. So not masses more. There is generally a temptation to look to the future. But, you know, Stokes and Key have both said, we want to pick the best players right now. I think he's 34, isn't he? It would be sort of ironic to drop Broad and pick someone a year younger.
It would be a bit like Martin Bicknell, wouldn't it, being picked at the Oval all those years ago.
The one thing I'd say on Rowland Jones, and this isn't at all critical. I don't think he's been hard done by not being in discussions, let's say. He's hardly been fit for a few years. I mean, I think I dare say he's surprised himself, and I dare say he's surprised Middlesex by being fit to have taken 30 odd wickets in five rounds of games, I think is what he's done. They've had to manage their resources very carefully because they've got Tom Helm as well, who's had a bit of a side problem, and between Helm and Rowland Jones, they've said they've not really had either of them for long periods in the last few years. And on top of that, they've had the speed gun at Lords for the last few weeks. And if those speed guns are accurate, he is bowling max mid late 70s. So he bowled beautifully against Durham, and I was there for his second inning six for actually. And as I say, he bowled brilliantly. That's certainly not to criticise at all. I think he's a very good bowler, and bowled beautifully at Durham's left-handers, of which there are about six, I think. But yeah, as I say, I think I'd be careful more than anything because of his own body. And if we're talking about England injuries, this is a guy who really has spent most of the last 4 or 5 years battling them himself. So one step at a time, as it were, even though, as we say, England don't have many bowlers left before.
he could be a Neil Mallander-type selection, though. Do you remember Neil Mallander came in, played two tests, took a five for at Leeds, I reckon. I mean, that could happen. It's not.
Ironically, that's sort of what he's been.
Yeah,
already,
it is. It is. But I mean, I suppose at the back end of his career. So if they are genuinely picking the best people for the job for each game, which I don't actually think is a particularly sophisticated approach, because it's always got to be a balance, then, you know, if these injuries keep coming, it is possible. A fairy tale farewell test, even, is a possibility. You would have to say he's probably not the answer to bowling Pakistan out in Pakistan.
No. I think to answer your question, John, would be a simple answer to your question would be if one of the big two got injured, he might be an in-betweener. It could be something like that if one of the big two got injured. But apart from that, I don't think you could have someone like Craig Overton in the squad and Rowland Jones, because I don't think they're too dissimilar to speeds or areas that they bowl. Though I think Rowland Jones are more skillful.
Nick, was there a surprise that Peter Hanscom left Middlesex, the timing of that? I know he's got international obligations, but
I'd say it was I'd say it took me by surprise that the announcement came mid rum chase. that was, but it gave him the opportunity for a farewell 39, not out, whatever it was. So he was always going away for the next month because he was in the Australia A squad for Sri Lanka, and his wife is due to give birth shortly after that. So there were certainly whispers of this that might happen, and so it wasn't a massive surprise. That he wasn't that surprised, to be honest, that he's not going back. And quite frankly, with the greatest will in the world, it's not really worked. He's got 17 first-class hundreds. He's played Test cricket. He captained Victoria to the Shield final. He is undoubtedly a very talented, very very good cricketer. But he's never really done it in county cricket, whether that's Middlesex, Durham, Gloucester, Yorkshire. And he's never done it for Australia and England either. But everything I've heard from within the campus, he's a very good captain, a very, very popular guy. He's just not scored the runs. And I think Middlesex, if you look at the successful teams actually in Division 2, or the competitive teams in Division 2, let's say, they've all got an overseas gun bat in the top five, whether that's Beddingham or Pujara or Rizwan, who's also not really scored the runs yet. Even Sussex last year, when they tried it with Travis Head and it didn't quite work. My point being is it doesn't always work, but let's not say it shouldn't have done, if that makes sense. I thought it was a pretty solid signing when the deal came through. It's just not happened. He leaves without a half century at Lords, which is their home ground, which is obviously not that useful. But it's not surprising not coming back. I think they've got a top order batter lined up. Tim Murtagh takes over the captaincy again, which he did last year when Hanscom went back early to prepare for the Shields, and they promptly won. I think they won three games in a row and finished second in that Division 3 thing. So it's just not quite worked in terms of run scoring, but for what it's worth, he's by all accounts a very good captain, and he leaves them as one of three unbeaten teams in the country. I think, to be honest, the most impressive unit that I've seen, most organised sides in this first six, seven rounds of games as well. So swings and roundabouts, I guess.
Okay, good stuff. Well, that was the top line. Let's take a look at the moments of the week.
Moments of the week.
So, Harmy, your old mate, Paul Nixon's saying it was his lowest moment as coach of Leicestershire. They lost again. That was certainly one of my moments of the week.
Not a Leicestershire fan, are you, John?
No. Yeah, I'm not saying the moments are good. I mean, what is in terms of county championship cricket, what is the aim? I mean, can anybody answer that
I'm not sure on the Leicester front. I think Sussex is the big example. On the Cricket Collective, me and Liam Manthorpe for the last sort of 2 years, we sort of not pull Sussex down, but have a little bit of a jibe at them, a joke at them, that whenever a coach is appointed, it's like, can you drive a minibus? Because it's basically, you're going to have to wait till the GCSEs are finished for the majority of the team to play. But I can see the planning in what Sussex are trying to do. You know, they've signed two gun overseas players, trying to promote youth, and obviously they're a lot stronger and a lot more financial resources put into the white ball game. But with Leicester, I'm just not sure what they're doing with red ball cricket. They haven't got a gun overseas player that goes and scores lots of runs and holds them together. They seem to be what Durham were, sort of right at the very start of my career. It was a whipping boy, 97, 98. There was no identity, no direction. And they got off, I wouldn't care, the first two games of the season, I think they got two very, very good draws. They fought their way through to get two very good draws. And you thought, you know what, with Nico in charge, that might just be a good thing, just to turn that, they sort of have some confidence going. But from there, they've really had a struggle. And yeah, one of my moments of the week was in that game, because young Haynes, 21-year-old, he looks a proper player. I think he might have to work a little bit more sort of on the front foot coming forward if he wants to elevate into the next game, because I was watching him and thinking his front foot movement isn't the greatest coming forward into the ball, because he does sort of play a lot further back, but runs on the board, the boy scored some runs, and for me that was the moment of the week, three back-to-back hundreds when you've not scored a first class hundred before that. Hats off to the boy. I think he's somebody to watch. We said that a couple of weeks ago.
I agree with that.
He's somebody to watch.
If he played for a more fashionable county, I bet you people would be talking about him as an England prospect already. He's certainly an England prospect, but not immediately. And he'll play tougher opposition, of course, but he stands out. Yeah, he's definitely one to watch.
I published an interview with him this morning, actually, because I've been banging the drum for Jack Haynes from the moment I saw him get his maiden List A 100. Like, so he got 150 off 120 balls at Chelmsford last year against, in the Royal London Cup, against Simon Harmer with Alistair Cook standing at slip, and a fairly decent attack. Not obviously, no, there was no Cook, no Porter, I don't think, but he just has every shot in the book, and he just looks very nice playing them. There's been a lot of talk about him for years, because he made his debut as a 19-year-old against Australia in a tour game. He got a load of starts. He was one of those guys, didn't sort of his struggle was sort of kicking on. I think he got starts in, proper starts in 13 of his last 15, in his first 13 of his first 15 innings, I think, is in first-class cricket, and then fell short of a ton a couple of times, and then sort of let that get on top of him. And but yeah, got these three in a row. And I think actually the most impressive of the three was, albeit on a pretty flat pitch, was the Durham 100, because I think a lot of young cricketers, having been in the field for the Stokes assault, as it were, for those first couple of days, may well have gone into bat slightly dispirited and lost that game in 3 days. But to bat, I think that was his longest first-class innings to date, actually, 270-odd balls for 120, not out, carried his bat, well, not carried his bat, saw the game through to the close, got the draw. And I imagine doing that with the England caps on the field, with Chris Rushworth, Matthew Potts bowling, would give him huge, yeah, well, gave him huge belief. And from there, he's obviously gone from strength to strength. His dad played 200 games for Worcester. He's played for England under-19s. He's just a very impressive kid. And he's a kid, only 21. But he's gone from having no tons in 22 games, which I think quite annoyed him, to having three in 24, which suddenly looks a bit more appropriate for someone, I think, with what looks like his talent and potential. Yeah, I think as George says, if he played for a slightly more fashionable county, I dare say we'd have, I dare say other people might have heard a bit more about
just on the Leicester thing, Normo.
Yeah,
there was one of my favourite quotes of recent times in a Reporters Network piece. I can't remember exactly what it was and who he's talking about. It might have been William Mulder, but Paul Nixon, in trying to find positives, said, "You know, I thought his second spell with the second new ball was very good." If those are the positives. But look, your question was basically, what was the point of Leicester, if we're honest, wasn't it?
No, not really.
Okay,
not really.
Fair play.
But, I mean, that would be a cruel way of the question. Literally, I mean, at the start of a season, what is the aim for a club like Leicester at county championship level?
Well, to improve. To improve and to develop players. And yeah, to hopefully poke up and contest promotion. Look, what they've lived off for a few years is the fact that they had produced players. You know, so we could overlook the fact that they hadn't won very many games on the basis that, okay, quite a lot of people have started their career there. And we all know, you know, James Taylor and Stuart Broad and Darren Maddy and Luke Wright and all sorts of other people. And that's fine. If they're a club that produces players, then they're probably doing their bit. You know, the production line hasn't been so productive in recent times, but even in this game, they played Rian Ahmed. I don't know how much responsibility they take for his development, but the fact is he is playing first-class cricket with them. He is starting his career there. For people who don't know, he's a leggy, he's an all-rounder, but a leg-spinning all-rounder. He got Ben Stokes out in the nets at Lords when he was, I want to say, 10 or 11 or something.
13,
okay, so I'm exaggerating. 13. Yeah.
I mean, but still young.
And he bowled him as well.
Still give it to him.
And he does look like an extravagant talent. He is, you know, very young. Ideally, you would be playing him in a slightly more experienced side, but he's getting first-class cricket. It is getting harder to justify them, I hate to say. But, you know, clubs do go through ups and downs, and they have generally got a pretty good track record of developing players. They're trying to be relevant in their community, which they haven't been brilliantly in the last few years. You know, they have won the Blast more than much bigger clubs.
They've won the Blast more than anyone else, yeah. Haven't they?
Yeah,
It's only, you're going back...
County Championship.
You go back 25 years to the County Championship, I guess, or so. So, you know, I'd still bear with them a little bit. It is pretty bleak right now, and you'd have to be a little bit concerned that the players they brought in, which in the old days you would call Colpack, but they're not, obviously. You know, the experienced sort of South African-born players aren't actually delivering, and the plans aren't working. But as long as they can produce some players, it just about is okay. But it's looking a bit grim right now. I can't pretend it isn't.
I think they've bought I agree on the overseas players. So I felt from the moment they were announced, actually, the overseas players were almost an attempt to be too clever by half. Like, you bring in Bjorn Hendricks, he bowls left arm over, and bring in Wayne Mullins, he can bat at seven and bowl. As I said earlier about those sort of getting a gun overseas in your top five, the game is to get someone who's going to score 1,000 runs and bat round them, isn't it? And then sort of put the rest together. You don't want two guys who, you know, the metrics say, well, you know, Hendricks has had, you know, Hendricks is a left armer, might do this with a new ball, that kind of thing, and Mulder can do a couple of jobs. You just want someone to smash out one job and to average 60 and then let the youngsters work around you. But then, I mean, I think they are developing. I think players are improving, whether that's Callum Parkinson, who came from Derbyshire and I think is a wholly underrated cricketer, to be honest, and whether it's others like Rishi Patel, who came over from Essex, and every time I've seen him play, looks just a really exciting young batter. Sam Evans had a very decent season last year. He got, I think, 3 or 4 first class tons. Hassan Azad a couple of years ago, people were talking about him for England A tour, weren't they? Winning Lions tour. And
he's had moments this season, to be fair.
He's got the same run since.
So individually, exactly.
I think individually, they've shown signs. I think they've tried to almost moneyball. I mean, they've probably had to moneyball it in a sense with, I think, Roman Walker came from Glamorgan. Is it Tom Scrivens, I want to say, came from Hampshire. They've had to look beyond the beaten track, as it were, in terms of sort of, you know, Rishi Patel came because he wasn't getting a go at Essex. Scott Steele came from Durham. You know, they've had to be quite wily, I guess, and take the odd punt on guys. And I guess the nature of the beast that they don't always work. And the experienced player is Colin Ackerman, isn't he? He plays the Netherlands, has probably not started the season as well as he would like, but has done well in the past. He's just lost the captaincy to Callum Parkinson. So I think you can sort of see what they're trying to do, but it is all a bit of a gamble, isn't it? In terms of asking young lads to come in and sort of hit the ground running. And their problem this season has just been runs, isn't it, more than anything else. Ben Mike, I think, has got a lot to offer as a cricketer with the bat, with the ball, more so with the ball. Chris Wright is sort of the other experienced man, isn't he? Bowling a lot of overs, but I think there's merit to it, but it is asking a lot of guys who don't necessarily have the track record, if that makes sense.
Okay, guys, let's zip through the rest of the moments of the week. Yeah, Hampshire impressed again. Somerset are gloriously inconsistent, aren't they, George?
Well, they're pretty consistent.
Words on Somerset from you, maybe, and then Nick.
Well, I think, to be fair, Somerset have won 2 of their last 3, haven't they? But I think they've lost something like 6 of the last 8 or something. It might even be worse than that. 7 of the last 9. So
is that consistency or inconsistency?
Well, it's a worry. And their batting is very fragile. I mean, it's exciting, but fragile. And it's hard to be massively optimistic because there's a real danger they're going to lose Craig Overton, who's so important, and Leach as well. So they have been dragged into the situation where they're genuinely looking at the season, contemplating relegation. I think still they'll be okay, but there's no room for complacency at Somerset right now. Yeah, they've got a lot of dashes. I mean, you look at the young players they've produced with a view to T20, and it's really, really exciting. I don't think they've got a bowling attack to compete in that tournament, as it happens. But their batting is very exciting. It's homegrown and it's young. So I hope people stick with them, because every county of the land would want Smead and Banton and Lammonby. But it is, they're looking very fragile with the bat. And Hildreth's coming towards the end, I guess, sadly. That's something they're going to have to look at.
Nick, a little word on Hampshire. There's a good article in King Cricket this week that Hampshire got the perfect bowling attack. There's no danger of stress fractures of the back with the likes of Mohammed Abbas and Keith Barker and Kyle Abbott, because they're not bowling anywhere near 90 miles an hour, are they? But they are a more than handy seam attack for county championship conditions, and they've won more games than anybody else, I think, in the division.
Well, I tipped them to win the title at the start of the season. Then you all laughed at me because Surrey beat them.
No, you and George.
And here we are now. Here we are now, railing back on your...
Sorry, who's top of the group?
Railing back on your...
Who's top of the group?
I don't know. I don't look that high. And to be honest, I think whatever the conditions you put Kyle Abbott and Mohammed Abbas in, they'd cause problems. But then having Keith Barker swing it from... left arm over and taking the wickets he's had. I think Barker's their leading wicket taker, isn't he, with I think 27 at very few apiece. And then the intel on the circuit is that no one creates more rough than Keith Barker. So having Barker do that, getting runs on the board, and then sort of throwing the ball, whether it's been to Liam Dawson or Felix Orgen or Mason Crane. Obviously, Crane's been on at Sussex, but they've got. It feels like they've got all bases covered, doesn't it? Brad, I mean, to be in a position where you can lend Brad Wheel to another county for a game, as they did to Gloucestershire, I dare say, highlights your depth, because I think Brad Wheel's pretty handy himself. James Fuller as well, who cranks up if they feel like they need a bit more pace on their side. So, no, they're just good, aren't they? I've got nothing more insightful to say than Mohammed Abbas is just good.
I think the arrival of Pop Welsh as bowling coach, Graham Welsh as bowling coach, is relevant. I think if you talk to bowlers he's worked with, his reputation's absolutely fantastic. Mm. And he's worked, obviously, with Keith Barker before.
Yeah. Ricky Clark reckons he gave him another five.
Yeah, well, he completely changed his career, I think. I think he's a fantastic bowling coach. And Keith Barker's feet changed Jeetan Patel's career as well, you know. They're huge. And he's got, obviously, he doesn't have a lot of pace, Keith Barker, but with the new ball to left-handers, it's about as hard as it gets. So there's a lot to like in that side. And it looks like it's two horses.
And he hardly goes for a run. He hardly goes for a run either.
And he can bat, as long as you don't bowl short at
him. The other thing with Hampshire, that speaking about the bowling there, I think the other thing they've done very well, and possibly more by luck than design, I think it's fair to say, they've probably made the two standout domestic batting signings as well in the last year, in Gubbins and Brown. Two guys who had strengthened, I think, any top six in Division One. Brown with the gloves as well allowed them to loan out Lewis McManus, and you know, having a genuine batter in that top three, I think, if they really wanted to put Brown there, I think, is, you know, that's before you get to Vince and Dawson as just very good county batters. And that's, as I said earlier, they've sort of just got all bases covered, haven't they, with a sort of 1-11.
Okay, well, look, we're racing the time as per usual. So there were the moments of your week. Let's get to Race to Lords.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Race to Lords.
Okay, guys, Race to Lords. Well, we're only going to have a look at the players that didn't get selected for the test squad. There wasn't a lot in there, really. Dan Lawrence, I suppose, headlining with 120 against Lancashire. Burns and Curran didn't play. Sam Robson as well, actually, 84-2 against Durham in a big win for Middlesex. Dom Sibley at 9-14. Dom Best didn't take a wicket. Milan didn't play. Slightly surprising, maybe, unless he was injured. Matt Parkinson, 1-83 against Essex. Josh Bohannon, a couple of low scores for him in the same match. James Vince, 6 against Somerset. Ollie Robinson bowled some deliveries, which is good. 0-42, though, and 36 against the New Zealanders. So there's your Race to Lords. Anything else in and amongst that? I suppose there was runs for Harry Brook again, because he was in the squad, wasn't he? Or isn't he, Harmy? So he's in form, that's for sure. But apart from that, not too much from the players that didn't make the cut.
No, Dan Lawrence is the one that I think if he was fit for the first six games, he probably would have been in the squad. If you're going to stick with Alex Lees, then you had to stick with Dan Lawrence, because I think they had similar trips to the West Indies, which Dan Lawrence probably got more runs than Lees, but they looked as though they had a similar tour, where they were probably one big score away from having coming back thinking, yeah, I've done okay. So with his injury, he's now come back, he's got 120, he puts his hat back in the ring, because I actually think Dan Lawrence is a good player. The Brook one is, again, you go back right to the very start of the show, you talk about, you know, who picked this squad. I couldn't believe it, I must admit, when I seen them names on the thing, and then when the planning department of trying to work out, you know, who's going to play what role and where, again, made me scratch my head. As much as a champion for 4 or 5 years, that route went to 3 because it's better for the team. And then he is more comfortable at 4, no question whatsoever. But it just makes it hard for somebody to go in at number 3. And you can say whatever you want, ECB, Rob Keane, whatever you want about how exciting it is for Harry Brook and Matt Potts to be in the squad. I'd be very surprised if they both play. More or less say Potts is not going to play. I mean, Brook's not going to play. But with all the euphoria of, we've got to bring Broad and Anderson back, Broad and Anderson this, Broad and Anderson that, they both play and Potts doesn't at Lords. I still can't see how they work out how you get Potts in unless you drop Stuart Broad and you've made a song and dance about bringing him back. So the Brook one, I just don't see it. I don't see why he's not number 5 for England on the 2nd of June against New Zealand for what he's done so far in county cricket. He's young. They've identified him years previous. And if there had been sort of big year tours in the last 2 years, he probably would have been on them. Went on the T20 leg of the West Indies trip. For me, he was a shoo-in about at number 5, which meant Bairstow had to keep wicket. But like I said before, who are these people that have picked that squad, and what do I know? I just make a noise.
I just think he's got a bat higher up the order.
Yeah, I agree with that, George. I agree with that. I can't remember who it was. I'm not sure if it was Ricky Ponting or Shane Warne. Said a number of years ago, said, if you play county cricket and you want to be a top 4, top 5 batsman internationally for England, you've got to bat 3 for your county, 3 or 4 for your county, because that's where it's tough. That's where you get your tough runs, and that's what stands you in good stead for international cricket. I can't remember which Australian, one of the two great Australians, said that.
Okay, well, he's right. Look, I saw that game this week, and he looks fantastic. You can fall in love with his batting real easy. But he came into bat in something like the 45th over, and he was out against the second new ball. So, look, he looks great. I don't want to take anything away from him, but it would be a lot easier to pick him if he were batting 3 or 4. And the guy we probably should start mentioning is Sam Hain, because he's obviously been a talented player for years. He looks hungry as hell right now. And he is converting, which is what he hasn't done in the past. So, one to look out for.
John, just chuck in on Lawrence. Lawrence, I believe, he's suffered a recurrence to that same hamstring injury. I think he entered his innings against Lancashire with a runner. So, even if, and I think, as I say, I think Army's right that I suspect had he been fit for the start of the had he been fit through the first set of games, he'd probably be named the squads. I also think had he got 9 more runs in the Caribbean and got himself a ton rather than 91, he'd probably be in the squad. But such is the way that the game is obsessed with stats and all that. But no, I don't think he'd be available anyway from what it sounds like. And while we've been on this talking about Middlesex's overseas situation, they've signed Peter Milan to replace Peter Hanscom. I believe George played for Warwickshire last year?
Yes, he did. And underwhelmingly, to be honest. But the pitches were hard.
Yeah, of course. South African opening bat, 32 years old. He's played a bit of test cricket, hasn't he? I think
he played against England, didn't he?
Yeah, he played against England.
Yes.
George, just while you were at the Warwickshire, Yorkshire game, I know it's a bit off piste here, but there's a kid that's always intrigued me from the first minute I saw him, and that was Brooks, the bowler. And he's been ravaged with injuries. I see you got the England captain out, former England captain out, Joe Root. I've always liked him. How did he go? Because he's a big, tall lad who hits the deck quite hard. But I'm not sure with the injuries if he's lost any pace or not.
Really, really good question. So he looked... you're right, he's exciting. I mean, he's one that the first time I saw him bowl, which I think was in the Nets, I was like, who's that? And I asked two people, and they both said, he's going to play for England. And those two people were Jonathan Trott and Ashley Giles. So it's interesting that you should point him out. So he's played a few times this season, and he did look as if he'd lost pace. In this game, he looked better. Look, at the last spell I saw him bowl, he was down at 75 miles an hour because you've got a speed gun on the feed at Yorkshire, which is fantastic. So he had lost a bit of pace, but before that, he bowled with some pace, some skill, and some consistency. And he is definitely one to keep your eye on. Yeah, he's built a bit like you, actually. So there's a lot to like there. Yeah, it's a worry because he's still coming back from injury, he's still growing, he's still, I think, just finding his action. And I didn't particularly like the look of the last spell, as I say. It looked like he was really tired. And that's when I think people get injured, isn't it? But yeah, really, really good point. And he got Joe Root with a classic outswinger, really. Invited the drive, left him. Beautiful. For what it's worth, and I'm not saying he is a better player, but Harry Brook looked a better player than Joe Root in that game. Which, that's not to say that he is better. I'm just saying that's how good he looks. He is, you know, very, very impressive to watch. But as I say again, he's been scoring his runs at 5, 6 and 7. Got a bat higher.
Okay, let's get to the mailbag.
The mailbag.
Okay, we didn't have much time for the mailbag last week, so we're going to make up for that today. So we're going to I'm going to stop firing off the questions. Actually, I'll ask all of you this question. Just one answers, one word answers, please. Michael Hall says, who do you think will win the county championship? George?
Hampshire or Surrey?
No. Who? There's a one-word answer.
Okay, you have to say one, I'll say Hampshire, to be honest, because I think Surrey are going to have more call-ups.
Stephen Harmison?
Surrey.
Okay, I'm going to go Hampshire. Rory North, is England batting selection a meritocracy of the county game? And if not, what needs to change to make it so?
There's probably still an element of the fashionable counties get more coverage and stuff. I mean, certainly the element of that. But, I mean, looking at this squad, I honestly don't think there's anyone who's missed out because they're at the wrong county or anything like that, or even in the wrong division. As I say, I'd have picked Sam Robson, but I can sort of understand why they've kept the same opening pair as the Caribbean.
I'm not sure, I might misunderstand the question, but I don't think that's what the selection of the England team's meant to be about. It's meant to be about picking players you think are going to win, but you've got to take so much into account to do that. And sticking with people, continuity of selection, making people feel confident and settled in the side is massively important. So you're not just picking who's done well last week, and nor should you.
Yeah, and as I said earlier, it's not, the test squad is not a county select 11. I think a lot of the anger at the squad when it first came out was probably because people had spent so much time watching the county championship for 6-7 weeks that they were expecting the squad to literally be the best 11 players from the championship. Obviously with a couple of exceptions and the sort of the stuff we talked about earlier. But I do think that there was maybe an overestimation on the amount of, you know, as I say, Brooke and Potts are, and probably even Pope, to be honest, are in that squad based on what they've done early season. But it would be unrealistic to think that you're going to pick an 11, you know, what, Ben Compton, Sean Dixon opening the batting because they've scored some runs for Kent and Durham. That's not how it works. It's not how
it should work.
You know, and it's they're not directly transferable. It's unrealistic to think that the job of the selectors, and ultimately why it doesn't always look right and why it doesn't always go right, is that part of the job is to work out whose performances in the county game will translate into performances in the test game. And you know, it's why Darren Stevens at 45 wasn't playing test cricket on the back of a double ton and a sixfer, because the determination was that one wouldn't, you know, translate into the other. And that really isn't a failure of selection. That is the nuances of having to work out where the game is similar and where the game is different.
Okay, Danny at De Frankland says, with both the chair, this is you, George, with both the chair and chief exec of the ECB being interim appointments, who will actually be in charge and making decisions regarding English cricket in the next few months?
Well, it seems Mo Boba and Andrew Strauss, doesn't it? But, you know, Rob Key's been appointed, so that's one role. And there are interim chairs and chief exec. I don't think we're massively far away from the next chair being appointed. But, yeah, he makes a completely reasonable point that there's a power vacuum at a very, very important time. So those roles need to be filled, and, Lord, they need to get them right.
Pitched Up Cricket at Pitching It Up says, biggest surprise and biggest disappointment of the season so far. Harmy?
Biggest surprise? I think you've got to look at the biggest surprise, if you're looking at individuals, you look at someone like Ben Compton.
Yeah,
I mean, he would.
Good shout.
I don't think anybody would have contemplated having the career that he's had so far, from up until the 7th of April, when the season started, that he'd be in a county select 11 and even talked about playing for England. I think even Ben would have laughed that year if he had said that to him. So good on him as a big surprise. Potts coming in, you know, and doing what he'd done and got himself a selection. I don't think Brooke was as big a surprise because I think England knew about him. So from that point of view, yes, that biggest disappointment, I don't know. Looking at, you know, the big teams are all doing reasonably well.
You might say Somerset.
Yeah, Somerset. Somerset as a county haven't performed as well as... But that division, that's a tough division. If you look at the top six teams in that division, you know, they're all test playing grounds apart from Essex, who are fifth in the league, who have got the bigger resources than the likes of Somerset. So I'm not sure that would be a huge disappointment. I think probably the injuries.
Yeah, good show.
And having to go back, England, I don't think we're going to go back to Broad and Anderson, but we are so reliant now, over the course of the next seven test matches, on a 35-year-old and a 39-year-old. And I'm not putting anything against them because they're still brilliant. But that would be a huge disappointment that we've got seven fast bowlers with one injury or another that are going to miss the majority of the season. So that, for me, is the biggest disappointment. Ben Compton, Matt Potts, probably the biggest surprise.
I'd say Brian Carsbowl, pretty sharpish at Lords last week. I mean, I don't know if you've spoken to people around here. I know he's only just back, but it was... I just thought it was quite nice to see someone back from an injury rather than rule out with one. But he bowled fairly sharp off. I mean, he wasn't as accurate, obviously, as the likes of Rushworth, but that's not the game, is it? And, I thought it was quite nice to see someone actually in a position to bowl.
Dave Studland says, how obvious is it that Kevin Sharp has played a role in Jack Haynes' development? The back foot shots are so similar to Joe Root, it's great. Any thoughts on that, George?
I think that's such a perceptive question. It's a really great question. I don't know the answer, but it's a really interesting thought, and there's probably something in it. Yeah, really good question.
As a coach, if you're trying to teach a young player how to play a shot, and you're sort of trying to give them examples, Joe Root's not a bad one to look at if you can try and master that. So. With the nearly 10,000 test runs that he's got under his belt, so yeah, it is. I think if you are a coach who had an experience of bringing somebody through, you know, who has gone on and done well, you can always reference back to that and help. But it's for me, coaching's about the individual that you're coaching. If they've got the ability, their ability will shine through. And I think the young boy down at Worcester, what I've seen in the last sort of 2 weeks and in the innings that I've seen. I don't think he'd be too far away when it comes September selection to go away from home, because I actually think his hands are brilliant. That's the thing for me. I think his footwork could be worked on. I think as a bowler, talking from a bowler's point of view, international, they'll find a way of getting it up there. And I don't think he moves his feet as well as what he would need, because he would get challenged. I think his hands are electric. They're very, very fast, very, very good, very quick. Gets him out of trouble. And I think when you go on to slower surfaces in the winter, I think sometimes your hands are more important than your feet.
I'm really glad to hear Kevin Sharp getting some credit, because I think he's a wise coach. And I wonder if he applied for more high profile jobs, what would happen? Because there's an awful lot to like. I mean, he's the guy who, for example, saw Libby playing second 11 cricket and got him to come to Worcester. We all know how that's worked out. You know, obviously played a big part in Joe Root and in Joe Clark as well. There's a lot to like about Kevin Sharp, and it's nice that he's getting a little bit of praise.
He's done the whole pathway at Worcester, isn't he? He'd have coached Haynes in the twos, then took over the one, then took over the first team and won the Blast, and then took over this sort of player development thing, hasn't he? So, and he's everyone that's worked under him mentions him, which is always a pretty decent sign. The other one that interesting with Haynes, actually, just very quickly, is he is one of a number of young players I've spoken to who has an Alistair Cook anecdote of how a chat with Cook sort of transformed their game. He was talking to Cook about how basically to not just get starts, and apparently he said Cook just calmed him right down, told him not to be worried, and and said that his first year was full of starts and his second year he smashed it. And fair play, because last year he got a load of starts and this year he's got three tons in a row. So, and I think also there have been a lot of runs, so it's easy to sort of turn your nose up at them almost. But 300 in consecutive games for a 21-year-old who's never done it before is really impressive, but also sort of worth making note of, because I think a lot of guys will get one first cut 100, but the guys who can, I think he was worried that it was a fluke until he did it again. So he's got a lot of talent.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, let's get on with the remainder of the show.
Match of the week.
Okay, so final part of the show, we're just going to have a little look ahead to the T20 Blast, which got underway last night and will continue throughout the summer. It's not going to be part of the school holidays this year. Maybe that's one of the reasons for the slow ticket sales. It does appear that the 100 seems to be taking a big bite out of the ticket sales for the T20 Blast, almost like this problem has been foreseen for quite some time, but so it's coming to pass. And we don't need to go down the route of whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's a reality, isn't it, George? The counties are going to suffer financially because the cash cow that has been so successful over the last 20 years is starting to be depleted.
Up to a point, yeah. I mean, obviously they get compensated, didn't they? So they get $1.3 million a year. So, yes, I mean, the game has cannibalised itself, obviously. And if you put... The schedule for the Blast this year is absurd. I genuinely wonder whether it's designed to fail. I don't think the ECB have tried to... In fact, I think they've tried to downplay it, to have a scorched earth policy in recent years. And I'll give you an example for people who think that's absurd. They count the sales for... the figures, rather, for attendance at a Blast and 100 completely differently, for example. Attendance at the 100 is anyone who's in the ground. It doesn't matter if they bought a ticket or not. The figures they give you for the for the Blast generally have been people who have bought tickets and attended. So those in rained off games were discounted. So about 4 years ago, off the top of my head, they could have said that they had 1 million people attend or buy tickets for Blast games, but they didn't. They played it down. Weird, yeah?
Yeah.
So, they've given the 100 the best of the schedule. They've given it the marketing. And what do you know? It's doing okay. And why wouldn't it? Because, you know, the games are very similar. Once you're in the ground and watching the cricket, barely tell the difference between 100 and Blast. And that's fine. I've got no issue with the product of the Blast. But, yeah, it comes at a cost. And, of course, it won't just be the Vitality Blast that it's hit. It will also be the 50-over competition, and it's also the championship, which is squeezed into the margins of the season. So, you know, the 100, there are things to like about it, but they come at a cost.
And in terms of the Blast itself, the runners and riders, we're going to be focusing quite centrally on the Blast and England for the next month or so on the show. But Nick, who do you think is going to be there or thereabouts this season? Who are you looking forward to seeing the most?
I think there are a lot of really good overseas players coming over for a start. I think Surrey's resources are extraordinary, quite frankly. The Narine-Pollard duo, just off the top of my head, must be close to being as strong as it's ever been as an overseas pairing in the Blast. Certainly a high-profile overseas pairing. Knots are always there or thereabouts. I was fortunate enough to be down at Hove, actually, a couple of weeks ago to watch Sussex's white ball squad, as it were, sort of that small group of guys who were just on white ball deals having a net together, and sort of did reinforce that however young their Red Bull side are, and obviously having lost Jordan and Salt over the winter, and David Reeser as well, there's still a lot of know-how and talent there with the Parra and Mills and Wright, and actually Joffre Archer was having a long old bat that day as well. I might be one of the last people to was probably one of the last people to see him play cricket before the stress fracture, to be honest. And then they've got a fair few overseas players coming over. I'm still trying to work out how they're going to... Availability will be interesting because Afghanistan are playing Zimbabwe, so I believe Mujib's missing a bit in early June. Rashid Khan won't be around for the start. IPL playoffs and that Afghanistan tour. Obviously Pakistan availability with an ODI series against West Indies is a bit of an issue for some as well, which is why Shaheen Shah Afridi is not going back to Middlesex. Mohamed Rizwan, I think, will go off as well at some point. Gloucester have got Naseem Shah for the start, haven't been injured for a fair bit of Muff haven't been injured for basically all of their county championship run, apart from the first game. But yeah, I think it's hard to look past Surrey and Notts, given where Notts go every year and given how strong Surrey look. Obviously, Kent were excellent last year and won it. Lancs are going to have Tim Davids, Liam Livingston and Josh Butler in the same top five, which will be extraordinary viewing, I dare say. And they will most certainly be there or thereabouts. Yorkshire, likewise. I honestly think it's a very, very strong competition. Certainly when everyone's got the best players out there, which obviously, as I say, isn't foolproof. But yeah, there are a lot of very good players out there. I would tentatively, if you were pushing me for a favourite, I'd say that Surrey's resources are quite a thing.
Good.
But I like Lancashire as well, and all the other ones I just said.
Good stuff. Well, look, time is against us. We'll leave it there, but we'll be talking about plenty of T20 cricket over the next month or so. Thanks for your time as ever. Following on County Cricketer, we'll be back next week on Thursday. But for now, thanks for watching or listening. Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.